What an appropriate way to start the show this morning with the opening of the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro and a little Buster Poindexter hot, hot, hot. And good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. And that it has been.
Yes.
Hot, hot, hot.
Yes, it
Man,
is.
Man, brutal.
And so what would be your Olympic sport if you were in the Olympics?
It has to be swimming.
Swimming?
Yeah. As hot as it's been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, swimming. How about lawn bowling?
Yeah,
Jarts.
Jarts.
Let's keep badminton. Come on, let's keep it going.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. But it was nice. I was talking to Dave, who was here overnight. When I got here, they were replaying the opening ceremony, and I told him, I said, about 100 years ago, when I was a child or a kid, or a young lad, that this was such a huge event for us that we'd all gather around the one television that we had in the house and watch it. It was spectacular.
You know, I remember the 76 Olympics, and we were just glued to the television.
Yeah.
And I could tell you where I was and who was what.
Mm-hmm.
What was the gymnast? Nadia Comaneci?
She
took everybody's heart across the world and won all those gold medals.
It was something.
Yeah, really.
Wish all the team members, U.S. team members, all the best of luck. And
I'm with you. And golf's in this year for the first time since 1902 or 04.
Yeah. And then I see where surfing's going to be an Olympic sport in 2020 or something like that.
Why not?
Going to be interesting to see.
I like it. So did you watch any of the opening ceremonies last night? I took in a little bit of it.
No,
it
was pretty neat. I was down at the Luminosity, the final Luminosity for the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, and what a spectacular event that was. But
what was your role exactly at the Luminosity?
Mostly just to get in the way.
Get in the way? Did you get in the way? Get out of my way?
Wander up and down the buffet lines, pretty much.
Good deal.
Yeah, it's down at the Cincinnati Masonic Center and Taft Theater this year, and we're down there just assisting and making sure that everything goes well.
Good. And speaking of the Taft, thank you for those Pat Benatar tickets.
Ah, glad you enjoyed it.
Awesome concert. Still great voice. As a matter of fact, she sounded, I thought, better than she did during the 80s when I was growing up. So that was a great show. Thank you, by the way.
That's all.
And that was Burger Week, too. Tina and I took in a lot of burgers that week.
Yeah. And, you know, this coming week is going to be spectacular for you to get something done in and around your house. We finally are going to see a lot of that heat and humidity exit. More comfortable and pleasant weather today and tomorrow. Temperatures, again, climbing back up into the mid to lower 80s, but much less humidity than we've been experiencing.
Now, is that today?
Today, tomorrow, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So we got 5 great days here.
Whoa. It was brutal yesterday.
I bet.
I think I lost maybe 2 pounds in a greenhouse. Give or take maybe another pound. I don't know. But we're looking at some better weather there.
Much better weather and lower humidity, which is the key for all of us. We can get a few things done. And speaking of getting a couple of things done, I was able to do that. As a matter of fact, I finally tackled my shed. Oh, it was a mess. Remember last time we talked, even the youngest grandchild, Gideon, would look in there and just go messy. And it was. And what happened was I had to get in there to get something, get the weed eater out. And stepped on one of my favorite old bird feeders, something that I was trying to recreate out of an old bird feeder that needed rewiring. The mesh on the outside.
Oh, okay.
220, 221.
Some outdoor lights. Okay.
The mesh had fallen apart and rotted away, so I was redoing that. And then when I stepped on it, it just infuriated me. So I just bit the bullet and jumped in on it.
So the little one got to you.
Yeah. Well, that and just is, you know, stepping on something like that that you'd been working on for a while and doing more damage than good. So it needed it. And
do you think Gideon picked that up on his own, or did he hear that from Grandma?
I'm sure Grandma helped out.
That's why I like little kids. when you're at a family event and something like that, you know, gets blurted out.
Yeah.
It's something they heard.
Yeah, you know the old saying, out of the mouths comes you know, little mouths repeat what little ears hear.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what happened.
I was just wondering. I thought, but obviously he got to you.
But
so.
I found a lot of things that I
just, it's amazing, isn't it?
It really is. Now I have 5 garden hose nozzles, 4 utility knives, several tape measures, and just,
whoa.
You know, hey, I'm stocked up for whatever
what
I might have.
What else was in there?
There are all kinds of hangers.
Any coffee
lamps.
Coffee cans with money or anything like
no,
that?
No, money. That's the problem I had is I'd put all this stuff into different containers and just put it in somewhere and going, oh, I'll sort this out later. And never coming back to sort it out. You know, that's one of my glitches.
What type of containers do you use? Are you using jars? Or
no.
Are you like one of those guys that take the glass jars and you unscrew the metal lid and screw the metal lid to maybe a 2x4, then, you know, just everything...
No.
Has its place. Come on, Ernie.
But that would be a great idea.
What about the metal Folger jars?
Any of those? I have plenty. Well, I take that back. There are probably about 3 of those that were in there. And then a bunch of cardboard boxes, plastic containers, you name it. There was stuff in it. And so now I have all that sectioned off and going to have to sort through it. But you can walk all the way through it now.
So it's a shotgun shed.
Yeah.
So you can go through the front all the way to the back,
all
some
the way.
Side rooms, bathroom.
Huh?
No. You know, talking about sheds, that's a great topic too, because you're right. All of a sudden, if you're not putting things back to where they belong, or where you're able to go back and find those readily quick when you need to, it becomes like a nightmare.
Really does.
And you get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself in those situations at work versus the house. You know, I could call Tina up on the phone and say, Tina, on my workbench, if you're looking at it and you see this, right to the left is that.
Right. Yeah.
And it just, that's so important.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Do you have any of those drawers? Like you keep all of your screws, all of your washers, all of your nuts.
Hey, let's not get carried away here.
No?
I mean, I just got stuff emptied out of it. But that's where I'm starting because as to my wife Lisa's dismay, I save all the coffee containers. I guess that's a leftover from my dad, too. And I decided I'm going to tape the front of them, label what's on it, put it back up on the shelf. So I will have.
You just made me think of something, too. Because you're really not a coffee person. So this has to be Lisa drinking coffee or your in-laws. But, I mean, I'm envisioning this.
Uh-huh.
If it's your coffee can, it says hazelnut on it. So you can put all your nuts in there.
On.
What about that? Come on. But you're right. You know, just keeping things kind of organized in a shed is so critical and important.
Yeah. So that's what I did, and I wound up creating 2 or 3 other shelves for some things to go up on, and then mounted a couple of hangers for the weed eater, the leaf blower, and the hedge trimmers. So all that's up, hanging nicely up and out of the way. That's the thing that I noticed was, okay, I wish I'd have done this 5 years ago.
Do you have electric out to the shed?
No, I don't.
Really?
But I found...
And you didn't
remember those tap lights that was really popular?
Oh, come on. You watched that. You got fleeced by that commercial where you like hang it up and tap it.
I don't think these were mine, but I did find a couple of those brand new in the box. So I thought, well, that'll be perfect. I'll put a couple of those up there, and hopefully I'm not out there working that late where it gets dark, but I'm sure that's going to happen.
Wow. No, I have electric down to my shed.
Do you?
Yeah, I have an old barn light out on the front.
Oh.
You know, that's important. Mm-hmm. You have to have electric. That's why you can't find anything because you don't have enough light in there.
That's exactly right. We need to take a pause in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking about sheds this morning to start things off. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking a little bit about sheds last week. I bit the bullet, got into mine, pulled everything out, reorganized it, put some new shelves in, some new hangers for the leaf blower, the weed eater, the hedge trimmer, shovels, and sledgehammers. Found an awful lot of things that I've been missing, and as I put on my personal page, that I had misplaced and then replaced them. So I have now 5 garden hose nozzles, 4 or 5 utility knives, several tape measures, hangers, and stuff.
Like it, Ernie. I like it. Sounds like you're turning the corner finally.
Yeah, that's it. I'm turning over a new leaf.
After 5 years of knowing you and conversing about these kind of things, you're starting to get it.
Yeah. And my wife makes fun of this. That's the problem with living life on the run, so to speak, always hurrying to get to something else that I've committed myself to or trying to get 2 or 3
you
things done at the same time.
You do a lot of that.
Overextended myself.
And when you do that, you take yourself out of the whole scheme of things. The whole game plan. Even things, you know, mostly things around the house.
Yeah.
And that's a fact. I don't know. I always like to piddle. And if you get out from in front of the television and just do a little piddling around the house, you'll get a lot of stuff done.
Yeah,
you really will. You know, it might be cleaning your screens or washing the windows. Just some of that stuff that you don't think about until it's like, whoa, those are really dirty.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to the sheds, I don't know if you stopped by or caught, you know, the Weaver Barns.
No.
Oh, really sharp stuff. Well-built stuff. Really? Ami sheds, built to last. There's no doubt about it. And if you ever get out on their website, it's weaverbarns.com, and when I go through these photographs of various shed styles, I mean, there's a number of different styles to choose from, and there's character to these sheds. You know, they don't just look like a square shed that you see at the chains. They have gables, they have windows, it's just really unique stuff, and it's well built, I can tell you that. Katie even bought one, as a matter of fact.
Oh, Katie Buckman?
Yeah, she sure did, and they almost look like little houses out in the back. And we're in the process of working on some things down in the yard, and I'm seriously considering one of these particular types of sheds.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's one. I like the Craftsman shed, and it almost looks like it has a second floor. Almost looks like the Brady house.
Right.
The Brady
Bunch. Right. Yeah.
But it has that second floor look to it that's... it has glass, has these small windows.
Ooh.
Some of them just look like lake houses. Really cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what that's one of the things that I do like about the shed. We responded off that when we repurposed it, opened it up and put doors on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And it really made the difference. And, now I just have to finish up a few things, and it's ready for the fall. Because believe it or not, you know, we've turned the corner. We've got some hot August days here, and then things will start. Those leaves are going to start falling, and we don't want to rush the end of summer.
No, don't. And it's hard to believe we're right here just closing in on the middle part of August.
Mm-hmm.
And where time has gone is beyond me. But you're right. You know, we're going to be looking at fall. As a matter of fact, we have a couple great guests coming up later this month. We have Mike Clare from the Boone County Extension Office.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about, you know, sowing grass seed and getting the lawn prepared for September and get things down and taken care of. Also, our good friends from Herman Services. Next week we'll be in with us. And also, I'm trying to coordinate this now with Vicki Tewis out there at Thistle Hair Farms. She's having some sort of a tomato festival, if I'm not mistaken, next week.
Right.
And Joseph Simcox is coming back into town. Now, he's a world-renowned seed gatherer. And we talked to him briefly. I don't know if you remember that or not, when they kicked off that first initial Cincinnati seed swap.
Yep.
But I'm trying to coordinate that as well. And I think he may even come in and shed some light on the origin of the tomato and the tomato seeds and all that good stuff. So
yeah, you can tell that it's tomato season. Just about everybody you run into right now is going, hey, do you need some tomatoes? I got plenty of extra tomatoes.
Right.
You know?
So as a matter of fact, I diced up a few, I think, tomatoes last night that I did get from Vicki Tewis. She was so kind to drop those off after I had stated or mentioned that the deer had eaten all my tomato plants.
Right.
Well, they're still there, but you can just tell it's like, come on, guys, really? I would have given you a couple tomatoes if you just had, if you just would have left them alone.
Yeah, you have to, grow a few for you, a few for the deer and the wildlife, and then the hope for the best. And hopefully they don't get greedy.
Anyway, Vicki was very kind to drop off some tomatoes, and one in particular, I'll have to verify this with her. I think it's called tie-dye.
Mm-hmm.
It has these variation of colors in it. And I diced up a few of those last night, and they were just like over the top.
Wow.
Little balsamic vinegar, olive oil, fresh basil out of the garden.
Remember the one cartoon character, the dog that I don't know what its name was, but whenever it would taste something good, it would just spring up into the air and start whirling around. I'll have to find out who that was.
Now, Ernie, I go back just as far as you do, and I remember a lot of good old cartoons, but I'm not dialing in on that particular
one. I wish I knew the name of this dog, but I'm pretty sure it was a dog, but whatever it would eat, it would, you know, spring up into the air and start twirling around and spinning. And
well, I can't remember the dog's name in Foghorn Leghorn. You had Underdog. You had Deputy Dog, didn't you? Right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to throw this out there. I don't know. Because I like those old cartoons. There's a lot of humor in those cartoons.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to have, when we jump into the break here, I'm going to have to do a little Google searching, because when you were describing that, the look on your face, I was like, this guy is into these tomatoes. And
interesting. No, but they were really good. So we have a great show, you know, a couple shows lined up here, you know, mm-hmm. as we get into the middle, latter part of August. So, and it's hard to believe we're in the month of August, like you
already.
Said.
Already.
It's crazy, crazy, crazy. But, you know, a lot of things are bothering a lot of people in the landscape. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I got a couple of things myself.
And they're looking for products to help them get through the hot summer months. And it's been brutal. It really has. And we were talking about the deer eating my tomatoes. When we come back out of the break, I want to tell you some things that you can do and some things that I should have done that I know better to keep those guys out of the garden.
Okay. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I found out who it was. It was from the Quick Draw series.
Quick Draw McGraw.
We'll do anything for a dog biscuit.
Anything?
Snuffles the
You're
dog.
You're killing me. I don't remember Snuffles.
Yeah,
you are a few years older than I am.
Yeah, anything for a dog treat. And when they would give Snuffles the treat, he would start rubbing his belly and flopping around and then float up into the air and then come back down. Snuffles.
So that's how I was with the tomato.
That's exactly what you looked like.
I got it.
The only thing you didn't do was rub your belly. And I don't want you to demonstrate that now.
No. And actually, it's not as big as it used to be, believe it or not. I've lost a few pounds.
You have. I was about to say that, and you're working out.
Yeah, right.
You're losing weight and looking good.
There you go. It was getting bad.
Well, we've been talking a little bit about sheds to start things off this morning, and that led us to a couple of things, conversations about your lawn. And some of the issues that people are starting to have late day, you know, issues where it's drying out. There's some weeds creeping back in.
A lot of things, yeah. You know, I've seen a lot of weed issues in you know, lawns throughout. And again, it's been a little too hot to treat those broadleaf weeds. But just keep that in mind. Temperature is really of the essence. And we're not far away from, you know, starting to look at that seriously and get back into the saddle, so to speak. And you were talking about some decent temperatures and weather headed our way.
Right.
And, you know, once you break the threshold of 85 degrees, you know, just back off on some things, you know, especially when it comes to spraying, you know, for broadleaf weeds. And it's hard to do that, but you're wasting your money and your time and your effort. So just keep that in mind. And you know, right now, August is the ideal month to start getting back into the realm of thinking. Like, if you need to repair your lawn in various areas, or if you're just building and finishing up a new construction home, you name it, or you're trying to establish a lawn, you're getting rid of one. Now's the time to start just jotting down those notes and ideas and an approach to do that. I can't say that enough. And if you're trying to rejuvenate a lawn, you know, that's existing, that should perhaps maybe full of clover, you know, you need to start thinking about, hey, I'm going to use Kills-All, and that's a high-yield product. It's a great product. It has glyphosate in it, and it will just kill everything that's in the lawn. And by the time everything dies off, it takes about 5-7 days. Rake everything out and start over from, you know, from scratch. So now's the time to start thinking about it, not at the end of September. And believe me, that's going to come.
Sure. And I did have a friend of mine ask me yesterday afternoon when we got down to the Cincinnati Masonic Center for the start of the Luminosity. And he listens to us and was asking. He's got that nuts edge problem.
Yeah, that's been running a little rampant, too, on a lot of people. For the first time, and I don't know if I mentioned this on past shows here just recently, but I pretty much have a lot of it under control. And what I'm seeing is coming up just, you know, in sparse situations in various other areas of the lawn. And that can take you a couple of seasons to eradicate.
Right.
And the reason behind that is this, is that underneath that main blade of Nutsedge, you know, there's an underground, you know, intricate root structure that has these little nutlets. And then just underneath the soil, those will come up the following season or two.
Right.
So the products that we use works on the main part of it. That's why it could take you a couple seasons to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. And what is the product again?
It's called High Yield. It's Nutsedge Killer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy that at your local garden centers and nurseries. And it comes in it's a real little packet that's inside this box. And if you happen to see another product called Sedge Hammer, they are identical. I'm telling you, they are High Yields comes from the same company. They are identical. They both have the same, you know, chemical compound in it. So the Nutsedge Killer from High Yield that you'll find in your local garden centers and nurseries is less expensive.
Yeah, he enjoyed our description of it. I remember talking about it, saying that, when you cut your grass, by the time you put the mower away, it's already starting to regrow.
Yeah, it's as soon as you walk out to the front, it's like, oh, you're already up. And it's Nutsedge. It's real. It's very light green in color, easy to identify. It has a triangular shaped stem.
Mm-hmm.
Refrain from pulling. You know, you can. It spreads that way too.
Sure,
you leave what's in the ground below, and it spreads. So, and going back to the little packet that's inside the box, do not get out a pair of scissors and cut it open and put it in your tank sprayer. It will dissolve. The cellophane will dissolve.
I like that.
They don't want you touching it.
Yeah.
So you'll simply place that into your tank sprayer, add exactly 1 gallon of water, mix it up thoroughly, and this is the most important thing that I can tell you in order for you to be successful with this whole approach. You need a spreader sticker, a surfactant. And that can be either like 2 teaspoons of Dawn dishwashing detergent, or you can buy High Yield spreader sticker. What this does, it helps this product stick to that waxy blade, and it helps with the absorption rate, and it facilitates the product getting into it, and it's more effective.
I got you.
So that's why that's important, and that's why that's very difficult to get rid of. If you're using Dawn dishwashing detergent, after you mix everything, put in 2 teaspoons and gently agitate it. Don't put it all in it at once and turn on the hose. You'll look like you had a rabid dog or something foaming.
Stir
it in, agitate it gently.
Not shaken.
Yes.
Yeah, like stir it in, good not martini.
Shaken. That's right. A good old martini. Absolutely. And, also if this is really important too, we're nearing the tail end of summer. And looking at some weed issues in the landscape beds, I want to encourage people to pick up High Yields Dimension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the product that's like Preen. I like it because it's better than Preen and it lasts longer than Preen. Now's the time to start putting that back down because there's a lot of weed seed that starts to germinate late summer into the fall season. And those are our winter annual weeds. So be sure to do that. It saves you a lot of back-breaking, bending over type of effort. And you're not on your knees all the time, and you can spend more time doing things with the family instead of pulling weeds or hiring somebody to come in and take care of it for you.
Very good. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. The weather this summer has been a little freaky, if you'll pardon the play on words. Some of us have seen a lot of rain, and others have not seen as much. And it might be causing some issues for your lawn. And we want to talk a little bit about that and mowing techniques.
It's been a little dry, too, believe it or not. Do you remember that last monsoon rain that we had a couple weeks ago? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if it was really a couple weeks ago, week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody saw that same rain or experienced or had that amount of rainfall in their particular, wherever it is that they're residing. I mean, I was talking with Katie the other day. And, I mean, I don't know how many inches of rain we had there in a brief amount of time over in northern Kentucky.
Yeah.
I was like, Katie, did you guys get a lot of rain? No, it only rained over here for about 5-10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You're kidding me. We had water everywhere.
Sure. Yeah, I remember that because I was down on 3L Highway, Madison Avenue, and it was raining cats and dogs, as they always say. And then I text Lisa and said, hey, are we getting some of that rain? Because we needed it for our lawn, not a drop.
Interesting. And it's just like every bit of that's kind of been a little south, southern Kenton County, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
But it's really weird. But you're right. Right there on 3L, did you see that hole? It just took all that crushed gravel stone that's on the side of the 3L highway and washed it away.
Yeah.
You definitely don't want to pull over there and get too far off because you'll be sitting on the bottom of the car.
Yeah, some instances people have not had to mow their lawn as often as others.
No. And, it's really important. Now, this morning when I left, I did turn on the sprinkler system.
Mm-hmm.
And I mowed yesterday and a little dry. So, again, we want to keep an inch of water on our lawn, especially as hot as it's been, once a week. That's all it takes. I want you to water less frequently, but longer, deeper, deeper watering.
Give them a good drink.
And you want your root system of your turf to go deep and be healthy, because that's what's going to really be key as we get into September, because we're not far away either. We're just weeks out from starting to put down that Fertilum three-step program.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first fall application. That's the lawn food plus iron. That is the orange bag. And if you're in the saddle and you're ready to do that right at the beginning of September around Labor Day weekend, you'll have the opportunity to see your lawn green up like nobody's business.
Sure.
You've seen it.
I have.
It gets nice and dark and green, and that iron just makes it just rich looking.
Oh, yeah. And, the key for that mowing experience, too, is keep the deck high on your mower. A lot of people make the mistake of thinking, oh, I don't want to cut this as often, so they'll lower the deck on the mower, and they're doing much more damage.
Absolutely. You're right. You're right on. Mow the second highest setting or the highest setting. And if it means you might have to sometimes mow twice a week, just stay on your game. I also like to mix up the directions I mow in.
Yeah, Lisa brought that up. She mowed the front of the lawn and did a diagonal pattern.
I like it.
And it did make a difference.
It gives the yard a little bit different. It's a different manicured look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's not bad to do, change that up. I always go different directions, each time I mow. You can see what direction you went into last time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important. Also, most importantly as well, is to keep that blade sharp.
Oh, yeah.
If you're questioning that blade, or if you're hitting a few roots or rocks or sticks or whatever, it's in your lawn or in the back, or you hear that clunk sound. sometimes you might want to just, when you're finished mowing, pull the spark plug wire off and turn your mower on the side. Take the spark plug wire off again.
Yeah.
Put your mower on its side and just inspect your mower blade. If it's nicked up, it needs to be sharpened. And take it to somebody that knows what they're doing.
Mm.
Unlike you, I don't think I'd take it out to you. I shouldn't say that. You like to sharpen yours on both sides.
I did that once, and it's going to be a while.
Come on. All right. I just had to throw that dig in.
Sure.
But that's very important as well. And, our friends at Bud Herbert Motors, if you're looking for somebody who wants to sharpen a blade for you professionally and do it.
You're due to go out there and purchase another tool soon, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, don't say that. Oh, I did not long ago. As a matter of fact, I told you about the chainsaw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It started up on the first pull over there. Bull.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like taking your car into the garage. It's making this noise. And you go out there, well, it's not the one
it
right
won't
now.
Do it.
Yeah.
No matter
never
what.
Fails. It never fails. That's what happens to me. So I'm just like everybody else. If it's happening to you, it's happening to me. So, but mowing the lawn is very important. And keeping your mower in top shape and condition is very important. And like I said, keeping it mowed, tall, that helps with moisture retention down low at the soil surface.
Mm-hmm.
It also, provides a little bit more shade, and it keeps weed seed from germinating. So all those come into play, comes into play with the Fertilum three-step program. And when we get into the fall season, this is the best time to get into the Fertilum three-step program.
Sure.
And, just check it out. Get with your local, garden centers and nursery professionals and ask them about the Fertilum program and just get more information on it. If you've never done it, you need to try it yourself. It's not expensive. It's relatively reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it yourself. And if you do not have a broadcast spreader, we're welcome to loan you one from Jackson Florist and Garden Center, and I know other nurseries will too as well. And if not, purchase one. You know, get an Earthway spreader. It doesn't have to be anything over the top. Get a rotary spreader, not a drop spreader, and that makes applying that fertilization or that fertilizer a lot easier, and you can do it yourself. And once you see those results that you get from the Fertilume three-step program, you'll be inclined to continue and do it yourself from here on out.
And you'll be thrilled with the result, to be honest with you. You'll have an opportunity to see that you're making a difference while you're out there.
Absolutely. But you have to have a lawn first. I want to put a lot of emphasis on it. The Fertilume bags of fertilizer, they are not magic bullets. You have to have a lawn first, and then that's going to bring everything else into play for you.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We are talking about your lawn. We're talking about sheds, and we'd like to be talking to you. 749-B105. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be a great weekend to get some stuff done in and around your house. And Mother Nature going to participate or help out, too, because lower humidity, lots of sunshine, and temperatures not as hot as it has been. And, Tony, we've been talking a lot about the lawn and getting your grass cut and getting rid of some weed issues. But I did have a question for you. In the back where a couple of years ago we had a little garden we decided not to put out this year. So what the question I have for you is that I've gotten to the point where we filled in some of the areas because it was lower than the other turf.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, some of those weed issues have blown in there. So now I need to, I rototilled it the other day, or I tilled it the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going to be, I guess, trying to regrow some grass in there.
So you want to sow grassy?
Yeah, just go back to the lawn.
Well, you kind of did something that it's not a good thing. When you rototill the soil,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times what you can do, not that this happens all the time, is that as those tines on the tiller dig down deep and bring some of the soil that's 2, 3, 4 inches underground to the top, there's weed seed that's underneath that the soil that's never seen the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you're introducing new weed seed to the top surface that now is going to get sunlight, moisture, air,
mm-hmm.
and germinate.
So should I go back and kill all that?
What I would do is allow things to run its course and see what germinates and then kill everything,
mm-hmm.
and use kills all. And by the time kills all takes total effect, it will be ready to sow grass seed, usually at several days or so. So, you just have to be patient. What's funny about kills all is this, is that often people will ask me or they'll call me up and they'll say, I'm not seeing anything happening yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's nothing fancy in kills all other than glyphosate, which gets down to the root and kills the plant. But what actually is happening is it takes a while for things to translocate down into the root system of the plant or the turf or whatever it is you're spraying to get rid of, and then eventually it dies out. By the time it dies out, using glyphosate, you can rake all that out and just about turn around and sow grass seed at that particular point in time. Now, unlike using selective herbicides that have different products in it. In those situations, those are selective. You're not trying to kill everything. You're only trying to kill things that's in the turf,
mm-hmm.
without harming the grass. And given that, there are certain waiting periods. It could be 14 days. It could be 21 days before you can sow grass seed. That's why it's very important that you always read the label. I can't say that enough. Read the label. They're there. The label's there for a purpose. It's not to make the bottle look good, but it is, in fact, there for a purpose. So make sure you read the label in regards to the type of product that you're using on your lawn. That's so important, and I can't emphasize that enough.
Mm-hmm.
And use it accordingly. If it calls for 2 ounces per gallon, or if it's 2.5, or if it's 3, or however many tablespoons, whatever it calls for, use that exact measurement, because there's a lot of money spent in research and using these products effectively. More is not always necessarily better.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, it's not better.
So do you think I need to amend that area once I do that? Do I need to come back in with some, you know, potting soil or topsoil?
Well,
or
you know, like if everything's graded out to where you think it needs to be, no, you do not need to bring in other types of soil. You know, now it's just making sure nothing's getting in there that's going to, you know, compete with the turf when you sow your grass seed.
Okay.
That's what happens. You know, these broadleaf weeds, they get into our lawn or they get into these areas that are newly sown. And what happens, they, you know, those weeds, they're competing for nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
They're competing for moisture. And it makes it tougher for that new, you know, the newly sown lawn or that grass, that turf to get established. So that's why that's so important. And here's something else that comes into play. If, in fact, you are or you need to bring in soil to grade off an area, get a good topsoil.
Right.
You know, don't go out and buy that on the pocketbook. I sincerely mean that, and I don't mean anything disrespectful about that either. And, you know, when you bring in something that's inexpensive, you're more likely to see some weed seed that you're not even familiar with.
Right.
You know, a lot of times these topsoil bags that are 99 cents or they're on special for 69 cents or $1.49, they are exactly that. And they come from various areas of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
They can come from up in Michigan. They can come from different areas. And you might see some things that really aren't even native and around here weed-wise that's growing. You're like, where did that come from? And immediately homeowners think that they had bad grass seed.
Right.
That's not the case.
You got what you pay for. It's the old saying is true.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we always talk highly of Hafner's and Sons. That's where I would start if I'm looking for a good quality topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
And give Hafner's and Sons a phone call and tell them what you're doing. You know, they have certain soil mixes for different various applications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one is, you know, taking care of or establishing a lawn. Another one might be perennial beds or perennial types of gardening soil mixes. A lot of different things to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
But choose the right product for the right application.
But you're
chuckling about that.
Well, I'm chuckling about the lawn seed. You know, it made me think. I did have one of those Ernie Brown experiences when I was cleaning up the shed. Apparently, Lisa had stopped down a while ago to Jackson's and bought a bag of grass seed, or I did. One of us did. And it was one of those things that got placed in the shed and forgotten about until I nudged it. And it was on a top shelf, one of those grated plastic shelves. And I kept thinking, I hear water running. And it was the seed where I had ripped the bag. It just kept coming down through everything that I just put on the shelf.
Oh,
so
wow.
I had to go down.
So you never put that seed down?
Apparently we didn't. So we'll be back to get some more.
And that's important too. And a lot of times when you're purchasing seed, there are seed tags that give you the breakdown and the analysis of the seed and the test dates and all that other stuff.
Right.
So a lot of times for those like yourself, if you've had grass seed for a while, maybe a year. You know, if in fact you had that germination ratio, you know, tag with your grass seed, and not always is that the case, but typically if you buy a full 50-pound bag, that's always on the bag.
Sure.
And it should always be in the bin where it is you're buying grass seed from. But you just lose a little bit of viability with that. Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe it might be 95%, you know, guaranteed to germinate. Next year it might be 86. So you just lose a little bit of viability. If, in fact, you have some grass seed, just throw a little bit down and test it and see what happens before you go hog wild.
Okay. Yeah, that was one of those moments where I had to pause, go get the shop back, clean up the mess that I had just created, and start all over.
I like it. Yeah.
And it happens. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning. Going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. A lot of sunshine, temperature in the mid-80s, but lower humidity. And we've been talking about turf and grass seed and how important it is to not buy it, put it in the shed, and forget about it.
Yeah, don't do that. Not what you want to do.
No.
Yeah, but look for a tall fescue. It could be a blend. We sell a lot of Fine Lawn Elite. We sell it by itself. We'll also sometimes blend it with something for different homeowners. And if you're looking to do some areas that has a slight gray to it or a little bit of a hillside, little tip, add a little bit of perennial rye with that mix, because perennial rye is the quickest to germinate, and it kind of helps keep things in place on a hillside, especially if you're getting rains, mm-hmm. you know, so that comes into play, and it's very, very important. And, you know, I also this year I'm experimenting with a new mix from the fine folks up at Central Farm. And it's got a bluegrass mix with it. And I don't have this in front of me, but the bluegrass that's in there, and our friend Turpin at Turpin Farms is a big bluegrass kind of fan. And it's called Rockstar.
Rockstar.
And what's good about bluegrass is this, is that it spreads by rhizomes. But, you know, Rockstar is supposed to be one of the better varieties out that's relatively new. And in addition to that, you know, a little bit more drought tolerant and so forth. So well, I'm going to try and experiment a little bit with this myself and just see what kind of results I get. But, you know, we're getting to that point in time to start thinking about grass seed. And when you're sowing seed, I'm often asked, you know, how do I know how much seed to sow?
Right.
And
back in the day, you just grab a handful and throw it out there.
Sure, you can still do that. There's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, just a good rule of thumb, just follow this kind of simple rule. That is, if you have 1,000 square feet that's bare, nothing on it, and, you know, just to generalize this, anywhere from 6 to 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet. You know, and every grass seed manufacturer might have a little different ratio there. So 6 to 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet if it's bare. On the flip side of that, we'll halve that rate, you know. So 3 to 5 pounds for 1,000 square feet if you're overseeding in areas that already has turf. So that's just a good rule of thumb, you know, it's just a generalization to give you an idea how much to put down. More is not better.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put a lot of emphasis on that. A lot of times when you put down seed and it's too heavy and it's all laying on top of one another and gets wet, it clumps together.
Right.
You know, it has a hard time getting rooted into the soil because, you know, all the seeds laying on top of one another. You definitely do not want to do that. And when you apply straw over the grass seed, a lot of people think that the straw is purposely used to keep the birds from getting the seed. That is the furthest from the truth. The birds are more apt to pick the straw and take it back and build nest or roost with it, actually. The straw is there to help maintain soil moisture, especially when it's been as hot as it's been. And ironically, my neighbor down the street, I noticed that a couple of weeks ago he had sown grass seed, and he's been diligently watering it, and it's coming in quite nice. I mean, not that you can't sow grass seed in the middle of summer. It's not the ideal time. You just have to water it daily and stay with it. If not, you're going to just waste your time and effort and money on grass seed. But as we approach September, it is the ideal time to plant grass seed. And when you sow grass seed and you're applying straw over the grass seed, when you apply the straw, do not apply it too heavily, or too heavy, I should say, because you want air and you want moisture and you want light to penetrate that. So when you look down, I want you to be able to see a little bit of soil surface.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And Tony, we have Jerry on the line who has a question for you about mulch. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for hanging on. Are you there, Jerry? Let me see if I can find you. There you are.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for hanging on.
We bought some mulch locally around here. We live in Northern Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought bulk.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed I got like a lot of, well, we called them with kids, milk duds. Look like vines growing in it.
Milk duds?
That's what I call them. The little, you know, the green little
pods of some sort?
Yeah, look like a big pod. You got like fuzzies on the end of them.
Oh, huh. I got you.
You know, are you using any type of pre-emergent?
I use preen.
Preen? You know, are you putting it underneath the mulch? Or are you putting it on top? Or are you doing both?
We did the bottom before we put it down.
Uh-huh.
And then we did the top when we was done.
That should have been effective for you. Now, the next question I have for you, Jerry, is when you applied preen, how long after the fact was it, or did you notice the thing started growing in or on top of the mulch? This is in the mulch bed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably 2 or 3 weeks afterwards. They just started popping up everywhere.
Okay. Did you Now that's rather quick, and that leads me to believe that something could have been in the mulch, because you know what you need to do once you apply those products like Preen or Dimension, watering it in right away versus waiting a week or 10 days before you get a really good rainfall to start activating that product to get into the, you know, the mulch layer and the top layer of the soil.
Yes, you water just about every other night or so.
Yeah, well, that should have broken that down well enough for you to get some protection or to set up a barrier. Now, I will say this. I know for a fact, and I personally use High Yields Dimension as a pre-emergent in my landscape beds, and they're weed-free. And my landscape bed out front, since I removed all the ivy, is quite large. And I know that Dimension has done an excellent job. Now, I've watered it in well enough to give me that protection. Now, I got to apply another application of Dimension to get that full protection going into the latter part of summer and into the fall. What I like to see you do is pull some of that and spray some of the whatever it is that you're being troubled with in the landscape, and then start using Dimension and see if you notice a difference. But for something,
I was gonna say, does that kills all? Because I got that. Can you just spray like spot spray it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and killer roses.
No. And if you know, and a great question too, Jerry, if you're in an area that there are some desirables, and when I say desirables, I mean other plants that are close by to what it is you want to spray and get rid of, you know, cut a big piece of cardboard, maybe 2 foot by 3 foot.
Right.
Either you hold it or have your wife hold it. So you don't
get a garbage can over top of them.
Yeah, that. Or
get
just
around the roses.
No, just so you don't get, don't get around the roses. But as long as you don't get any overspray,
right?
You'll risk damaging desirables, and we don't want to do that. A lot of people will take a 2-liter bottle, like a plastic Coke bottle or what have you.
Right.
They'll cut it and they'll put that over their spray nozzle, and it kind of keeps things funneled. And
like
it keeps
a funnel.
Yeah. So, you know, try that. You know, you could have very well had something in there, unfortunately. That's not, you know, I'll never rule that out. That, you know, that could be the situation, or something was already in there established before you put the mulch down.
Yeah, because we normally go out to Nator's and get it.
Okay.
And I never had this issue before, but then we just bought it local, you know, just nearby.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you know, buying mulch is important too. I can't say that enough. And a lot of times, you know, I know when people go buying truckloads of mulch, they're wanting that $15 scoop instead of the good $25 scoop or $30 scoop.
Yeah, I mean, these are $30.
Well, it just varies. Now, I'm not saying everybody's mulch is bad, but a lot of it depends on how it's aged and how well it's heated up to kill weed seed that's in it too.
Right.
So that's why using those pre-emergent products is of the essence and so important. All of a sudden, you could be riddled with stuff. It's like you'll shake your head and you'll just be in dismay, you know, just like, what's going on? But, try the Dimension. I think you're going to like it. It's less expensive than Preen. It lasts longer than Preen.
Yeah. I mean, she's tickled death with stuff you guys suggest, because I called earlier about the roses in this early spring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I called it the ick on them, whatever they had, and I cut them back, like you said, and I went up and got some of that,
the drench?
Yeah, from up there at Jackson's from you guys.
It works. It really does.
It's a lot better than I did before.
I can't say it enough. And, you know, we'll have some issues in a nursery. So will other nurseries with our rose bushes that are in containers, because we're restricted. We can't use some of those products in containers. I've tried it, and I know why it says not to do it. You know, you'll do a little bit more damage to the plant than you do good. But we've cut a lot of rose bushes back, and now they're coming on really nice, and they're looking stellar, and they're not far away from blooming. So never be afraid to cut back a rose bush if it's looking kind of shady.
Yeah, and also I got one more question. We did a 3-step program for you guys.
Yeah.
Is it too late for the summer application?
Well, really, there isn't a summer application. We're getting close to, in another 2 to 3 weeks, to put down the first fall application.
Right.
And, Jerry, that's the orange bag. It says Lawn Food Plus Iron on it.
Right.
The only time I encourage people to do anything, if, in fact, they're adamant about doing something in the summer months, is use Milorganite, because it's non-burning. But on the Fertilume 3-step program, the first step should be going down mid-March to mid-April. The second step is the first fall application step. That goes down around the beginning of September or any time in September. And that third step is middle of November. So really, there's nothing in the middle, so to speak. So, you know, it's really your call or any other homeowner's call as far as if they want to do something in the middle of summer, which I totally, I encourage people not to fertilize in the summer unless you really think that you need to for whatever reason.
I mean, it looks really good. I mean, me and my neighbor more or less compete against each other. And he has his sprayed.
Yeah.
And I just do the three step, and he's like, I can't believe that stuff works that good.
Yeah. It works. Well, you got it.
Tell him you can
$300 a month or whatever it is.
You don't need to do all that. I was going to say, be sure to tell him you could save him a lot of money.
Oh, I turned my brother onto that stuff, and he's like, I'll never use another spraying company.
Awesome.
All right, Jerry. Enjoy your weekend. Stay cool.
You too.
Thanks. Bye. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Rob on the line who has a couple of questions about raspberry bushes. You got some issues with yours, or do you have a lot of them you want to share?
Yeah, I wish I had a lot of them that I could share. We've had the same raspberry bushes now. They grow more like a vine, but we've had them for about 4 or 5 years. They grow really well, but we have never gotten a raspberry off of them. What could be the problem there?
Are they blooming?
No, they don't bloom or anything. They just grow up. I'm not kidding. I'll bet you they'll grow a vine, and they could grow as long as 10 foot long if I didn't cut them back.
And how many do you have?
Well, when are you? Let's go back to some things here. When are you pruning your raspberries?
Normally I'll prune them at the end of the year as soon as they start dying off.
No, well, it gets a little tricky, but you're not getting blooms. You're cutting out stuff that you shouldn't be cutting out because they're setting up for the next season.
Okay.
So, you know, put off your pruning in the fall. Don't do it in the fall.
Okay.
You know, and what you want to do too, with raspberries and even blackberries is, you know, you have Florida canes and Primo canes. That first Primo cane that comes up, it will not bloom until the next season, and that's when you get the fruit. So you're cutting, you're pruning at the inopportune time. And what happens is when you have a cane that produces fruit, the next season, you know, or that season, when you pick the fruit, take a little piece of, take a string or maybe a little piece of ribbon and tie around that cane. That is the cane that gets pruned out because it will never fruit again.
Okay, so I'm pruning it prematurely.
Right.
We've had them for 5 years, and we tried pruning them in the spring. We tried pruning them in the fall.
Right.
So the canes that are there right now don't do anything.
Right, you're going to have to wait and see what happens next year. Because obviously you're not getting anything. But
we
what
have 5 years and we have not gotten a raspberry one off of them.
Well, you should be. And when I asked you if they were blooming, you know, that, you know, something's going on, and it has to do with when you're pruning, the timing. Gosh, there is, I'll have Ernie get some information from you because I can put you onto a publication from the University of Kentucky that gives you some really good, valuable information for raspberries and blackberries and so forth. And, you know, you want to prune those late winter, early spring, and take out those old, that we call them the fluoro canes. Those are the ones that produce the fruit the prior season.
Okay, so I don't cut them out, though, until this year I'm just going to leave them completely.
Leave them go,
Next year will be the one when I cut the ones out that hopefully fruit.
Do you have a lot? I mean, how many do you have? And are they trellised? Do you have, like, a wire cable system?
I build a cedar trellis that we've got them growing up, and I'll say there's probably, you know, even after the new shoots and everything, there's probably 15 or 20 shoots that are coming out of them.
Yeah, okay. And those are going to be your Primo canes for the next season. And then the following season, they will be the ones that produce the fruit.
Okay.
So let's see what happens next year. And then those that produce the fruit, those are the ones you want to tie a piece of string around or a piece of ribbon. And those the ones that come out.
Okay, now one more quick question for you. My blueberries, they do awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We got those from an apple house that has since closed recently. But our blueberries have done great for the last 10 years. This year, they didn't do as well. However, I put the birds were getting to them every year, so I put a net, completely a real nice net over them.
Uh-huh.
I take that thing off because this year they didn't do as well.
Well,
the net's been on them for 2 years straight.
No, that's a timing thing because what you're trying to, you know, netting will also produce a smaller, little bit of shade too. So that comes into play with some of the blooms.
Okay.
So you want those, don't put it over there prior to blooming. You want those blooms to set up for you so you get the fruit. Then as things start to produce, as those fruits start to develop, then put the netting over it.
Okay.
Where you keep the birds off of those.
And when should I prune those?
Well, it varies. You said they're quite old?
They're probably, I would say, now I think about it, they're probably about 7 or 8, maybe 8 years old.
You know, I like to get into those, you know, like late winter, early spring, and thin them out a little bit.
Okay.
And get some of the old wood out and keep the new stuff, you know, where it's regenerating itself. And that's when you'll have more prolific blooms and production.
Okay. I appreciate it.
All right. Let us know how it goes. Thanks.
And hang on.
Yeah, and I'll get some info and get touch base with you on some publications.
Okay. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And Tony, we have Justin on the line. We're going to come to you right out of the break. Got a Creeping Charlie question for you. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Justin on the line, who was kind enough to hold on. He's got a Creeping Charlie question for you. Hi, Justin. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well.
Hey, I've got a good portion of my yard, I'd say, I don't know, close to half of it, where, you know, Creeping Charlie is starting to work its way up into the yard. And so I'm really going to start getting after it this year with the weed-free zone.
Yeah.
And I know the time to put it down is into the fall, correct?
Yeah, fall is a good application point for Creeping Charlie because at that point in time, as we get later, the latter part of fall, going into the winter months, a lot of its energy is translocating down into the root structure. So therefore, it's taking the product in more efficiently.
Okay.
Also during the spring when it's in bloom.
Okay.
So
put it down in the fall, and I mean, after one application, will I see it come back in the spring?
Oh, you could. It takes a couple applications. If you have a lot of it, you know, go after it with, Kills All.
Yeah.
It just depends. Pull some, spray some. Pull some, spray some. Just stay with it. It's really one of the more difficult to get rid of broadleaf weeds in the lawn. It's crazy.
It's driving me crazy. And then I use the three-step program as well. Do I need to put that down before I start spraying the Creeping Charlie, or do I need to wait until after I put an application down?
It's not going to really matter.
It won't. Okay.
No, not at all. But stay on the Creeping Charlie and don't give up on it, because once you do and it gets a foothold on you, it's like good night, Irene. I mean, really, it can take over real quick.
Yeah, it's starting to, but it's on the side of a hill, and it's starting to work its way up the side of the hill. So,
and if the temperatures, Justin, you know, get a little better and cooler, you know, where we're staying in like maybe the upper 70s or low 80s, go ahead and try and spray a little bit of it, you know, and more's not better. You know, I'm not against trying to go at it when you can go after it. You know, it's all about temperature too, but you know, just there are various times when it's more vulnerable.
Okay.
You know, and that is in the spring when it's in bloom, and later in the summer going into fall season before things start to shut down.
Okay.
But if there's a point in time in between, you can go after it a little bit without damaging or harming the turf, go for it.
Okay. Will that weed-free zone damage the turf if I put too much down?
If it's hot, it will.
Yeah.
Often people will tell me that it got rid of what they were spraying, but it also injured the turf. And that's exactly what it does. It injures the turf, but the turf bounces back.
Okay.
But when it really, the temperatures are up there, it the turf doesn't like it.
Okay.
And neither do the weeds. You know, they shut down as well, too. So it's, stay with it.
So once the temperatures start down into the 70s consistently, I can put an application down, then I can do another one in the fall?
Yeah. You know, as long as you're under 85, how's that?
Right.
Yeah.
About how long between applications should I wait?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say 21 days.
Okay.
You know, I would wait 21 days because you don't want to keep applying it and injuring turf around it. But right. stay with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get after it here pretty soon. So, all right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
All right.
Good question. But Creeping Charlie's one of those more difficult to get rid of weeds in the turf, and just stay with it, and you'll come out on top, that's for sure.
All right, thanks so much. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Rock on the line, who's got a crepe myrtle question for you. Hi, Rock, thanks for hanging on.
Yeah. Hey, Tony, got a question for you. On crepe myrtle, I've seen them down south. Is there any variety that will grow up here?
Yeah, you know, we're about as far north as you want to go to bring some of those varieties, you know, up this way. Most of them are zone 7 on, you know, zone 8, zone 9. If you're to do a, crepe myrtle, what I want to tell you is this, is that, you know, try and plant it in an area where it's somewhat protected. You'll be glad that you did. And, you know, I know that, you know, a couple years ago, I don't know if you caught a show where I talked about I planted a crepe myrtle in our side yard. It was after the winter of 2012, and I was betting on, and I was kind of bragging, you know, what are the chances? What's the likelihood of us having back-to-back winters like 2012? So I planted this beautiful four-stem, multi-stem crepe myrtle tree, and guess what? Rocket.
Got that winter.
It biffed it. And what happens typically, you know, once they're established, they'll die back to the ground. They'll behave almost like an herbaceous perennial. And they'll die back to the ground, and they'll come back and reestablish themselves as shrubs. Now, this year, it's blooming its head off, and it's beautiful. It's probably 7 feet now, more shrub form. Now, I could cut out some of the lower branches and try and train it to become a tree again. You know, but right now it's in full bloom and it's blooming its head off. So, you know, most garden centers, most reputable garden centers and nurseries that carry crepe myrtles, they will tell you the same that I'm telling you. It's Russian roulette, and we only bring those varieties, you know, up this way that we know will tolerate some of our winters.
Okay.
But
thank you.
Yeah, and don't, you know, as long as you go into it knowing what could happen, don't be apprehensive about planting a crepe myrtle. They can be beautiful in the landscape.
Okay.
That's what gardening's all about. You know, it's trial and error and being willing to take some risks sometimes. You know, you know, getting things in different little microclimates or areas around our homes, it will work. And sometimes it doesn't, you know.
But let us know how it goes.
As long as you know going into it, you're fine.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, Tony, we have Jane on the line from Dayton, who's got another crepe myrtle question for you. Hi, Jane. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Tony. Thank you. I just heard you talking about the crepe myrtle, and I had put a post out there on your website on visitors posts, and I hadn't got an answer on it.
Oh, I didn't see it. I apologize.
No problem. We have had a crepe myrtle that comes back every year, but the deer kept eating it off. Well, my husband went out and bought two more to put on each side of it. And it's really blooming really pretty, but if you do, when should you trim it and shape it?
Late winter, early spring.
Okay.
Crepe myrtles bloom on new growth. So if, you know, a lot of times, you know, if some things, let's take the a lilac, for example, that blooms early in the spring.
Right.
Things that bloom early in the spring, typically their buds have set up late summer, you know, going into the fall season for that spring show. And when you prune something out in the fall, you know, especially if it's a shrub that blooms in the spring, you're cutting out some of the bloom production for the following season. So with the crepe myrtle, it blooms on new growth.
Oh, okay.
So you don't need to worry about that. And the prior caller about the crepe myrtle, you know, they're beautiful. They really are.
Oh, they are.
And like I said, a lot of times, you know, there are some that are categorize as being in zone 6, which is where we are for the most part. Most are like zone 7. I have one. Mine is white, and it's called Sarah's Favorite. I like it. It was a tree form. In fact, it died back to the ground, and it's categorized as a zone 6. So that just kind of tells you that they can be temperamental, and you have to be willing to put up with that. Another one of my favorites is Dynamite. You know, it's got that beautiful cherry red flower color to it.
Right.
You can't beat the bark on these, especially when they're in tree form. So you can just go on and on. And
well, he had that one, the red one, that was that we've had for several years, but the deer kept beating it off. So this year I finally was spraying it good with Deer Stop, and they didn't eat it off this year, and it's growing really well, and it's blooming now.
Well, good. And what product are you using, Deer Stop?
Yes.
Is that in a red container? I'm trying to...
It used to be in a red spray container, but I've been getting the concentrated form on Amazon, and also Lowe's has the concentrated deer something repellent or something that I've been using this year.
Yeah. You have to stay with it when it comes to deer, and that's what I was talking about earlier in the show, that they came up and helped themselves to some of my tomato plants, and I know better.
I know.
And I'm just like everybody else. I get sidetracked. I don't stay up with things, and I know for a fact when you don't stay up with it, they'll come in the yard and they'll take care of business for you.
So, oh, I know. I've called the mayor several times threatening to shoot them. But he won't do anything about them. They're getting really bad in this area.
They can. And I apologize. I missed your post. And if that ever happens, please call and let me know. I know that sometimes Ernie looks at posts and Katie might. And it looks as if somebody's looked at things. And that's when I stumble across something like, oh, I didn't respond to that.
Oh, that's okay. I also posted something out there about a vine that grows up a tree. It's not periwinkle vinca. It's a vine that grows
up. Is it a euonymus, a wild euonymus?
I have no idea what it's called. It was just wild.
Okay.
And it can get, when it grows up the tree, it can get as big as small tree trunks.
Oh, that's crazy stuff. You know, I don't know what that could be. I have to look at it, but I will take a look at it, and I'll follow up with you.
Okay,
a lot of times, you know, don't allow some of those, especially if it's a tree that you want to protect and keep around for some time.
Right.
When things start to host on a tree, that's not the best situation to be in.
Right. I've been trying to keep them cut back, but some of them are so big, I mean, you have to have a chainsaw to cut through them.
Oh, wow. And some of that could be poison ivy, too.
No, it's not ivy. Okay. It's a vine. I've been pulling it up and trying to keep it pulled up on my hill.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the vines just, they grow deep underground, like periwinkle vinca, you know, the roots are just close to the top of the ground. This grows deep under the ground, and if you don't get all the roots out, I mean, when you start pulling, it pulls a long way.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, in that particular situation, you know, cut that down low around the tree, and be gentle to pull it off of the tree bark. If you start ripping it off, what could happen is you'll start pulling the bark off or you injure the tree.
Okay.
And where you make that cut, use a stump killer, something that has a high concentrated amount of triclopyr in it.
Triclopyr.
Yeah, and put it right on that fresh cut and stay with it and see if that doesn't help you knock some of that down.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Great. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Love your show.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Tony, we have Michael on the line who has a question about lawn issues. Hi, Michael. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Is that your radio? Can you turn that down just a second?
Sound like a bullfrog back here.
it's a rumble strip.
you're driving. Okay. So what kind of lawn issues are you having, Michael?
Well, the whole thing is I got no lawn. It's a bunch of dirt, and I can't get grass to grow there whatsoever. I've tried I've tried grass seed and then putting down straw over top of it and watering it constantly. I've even taken and broken up the ground underneath trying to get the
loosen it up,
get down in there.
Yeah,
and I can't get it to grow at all. And I was just wondering, I know it's kind of late in the season now, but if there's something I can do to kind of prep it over the fall to get it to where I can start getting something to grow back up in the spring.
Well, Michael, you're fast approaching the perfect opportune time to sow grass seed. And that is in the month of September, late August, going right at the beginning of September. I want you to be ready to have that seed and get it down.
Okay. Now, is there a specific type I should use?
Yeah, I want you to.
I have a bunch of shade in the backyard.
Okay, that's where I was headed first. I wanted to ask you, what type of growing conditions do we have around the home? You know, do you have a lot of established shade trees? Is this out in the open where it's getting at least 6 hours a day of sun?
I'd say probably, it may be getting about 6 hours of sun.
Well, if you're getting a good 6 hours of sun, you can pull this off. Now, a lot of times when homeowners are struggling to keep grass seed under large established shade trees, that gets really difficult and cumbersome to keep going or, you know, moving along. And what happens is when you get into the hot part of the summer months and you have these large shade trees and the grass that you established in the spring, it starts to take a back seat to those large tree roots, because those large tree roots, they win. They get a majority of the moisture that's made available to that particular part of the yard. So then the other types of turf, they just start to go off and wane off and, you know, dies off. But, you know, if you have large shade trees, do it in the spring, because if you do it in the fall, what you're going to end up battling is when the tree starts to drop all of its foliage. And then you start getting into the rainy part of the fall. And all of a sudden, you know, you have these wet leaves matting down all that new turf that's been established. If you can keep that from happening, go for it.
Okay.
But what I want you to do, what garden center are you close to?
Pretty much anything.
Where are you calling from?
Out of Cincinnati.
Okay. You know, any reputable nursery and garden center is where I want you to go. A local garden center that carries grass seed and all the supplies necessary to make this happen. And what you need to do is I want you to use a tall fescue type of blend. You know, is this a flat surface where we're working with, or is it a slight grade? Is it a hillside?
No, it's all flat.
Okay, even better. But look to pick up a tall fescue blend, or you can use Fine Lawn Elite. It's your choice. But use a tall fescue. You need to prep the soil. And what we need to do is loosen it up. And if that means you going out there with a hard rake or some other type of tool to loosen the soil up so we get really good soil-to-seed contact when you sow seed, that's so important. If it's compacted, if it's hard, it's not going to really take. You're wasting all your time and efforts.
All right, sounds good.
So, and then after that, put down a little bit of straw, about 40% coverage ratio. I want you to be able to see through it. And water every day, every morning, until you start seeing turf growing. And then you need to stay with it. But we're fast approaching the ideal time. So be ready to prep everything and get a good grass seed and get it down.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, Michael, have a good weekend.
You too.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. And Tony, want to get your opinion. A friend of mine's got some echinaceas, and I wanted to know what you think about those. Oh, here, let's get you.
I'm over here. You there forgot you about me, didn't you?
I didn't.
Hey, I'm over here.
The good old coneflower, echinaceas. Probably, you know, it's one of those summer blooming perennials that right now, actually, we have some in the garden center, and I know other local garden centers have them, Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
They're blooming their heads off.
Yeah.
Looking stellar, and they can take the heat. And one of my favorite series of echinaceas is by far the sombrero series. Yeah, but you just get that big sombrero and kind of use that as your garden hat and go out and plant some echinaceas. But they definitely, they'll take the heat. They'll give you that beautiful summer color. And just, what I like about, I have to say some of the best attributes about the echinaceas, the sombrero series, is this. They're very cold tolerant. A lot of echinaceas that have been introduced into the gardening world in recent years, you know, they struggle. I think a lot of them struggle. And they don't like wet feet. You don't want to keep them overly wet. You don't want to water them too much, nor along that wetness term, they don't want to sit in an area that stays wet all winter either.
Right.
So you got to have, you got to provide for great drainage. That's very, very important. They're floriferous. They just bloom their heads off. There's no doubt about it. Deer resistant. Now, when I say deer resistant, I mean resistant.
Yeah.
Because I've seen those guys just chew on some gnarly stuff because they're, it's feast or famine.
Right.
With those guys. So, that's a good thing. That's a good attribute about them. They're deer resistant and, they're very sturdy. You know, they stay upright. They hold well, you know, they hold up well together. They're not flopping over, laying over. And, they really brighten up a garden, especially if you're into perennials. I, probably have to say one that's, my favorite in the Sombrero series is one called Salsa Red. We have a couple of those in the garden center, and they are a deep, deep red. It's a stunning red. So look for Salsa Red. Hot Coral, that's the one that always sells out the quickest. I lean towards the red. I think the red's really cool looking, but Hot Coral. And is this a friend of yours that has echinaceas or wants echinaceas? Or
Yeah. Yeah, but, has them, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, I love them. Adobe Orange is another good, cool color, neat color when it comes to the Sombrero series. And typically, you know, you can factor on your echinaceas getting around 2 feet in height, give or take, maybe a 15 to 20 inch spread width, so to speak. But another one too is that they have a Blanco, which is a white. White always shows up really well, too, in a garden, especially from a distance. Yellow does. They have sandy yellow that is very striking. But you can't go wrong with these. And I gravitate towards, I like the red, Salsa Red. I like Adobe Orange. And there's another one that I like a lot, too, called Tiki Torch, which is not in the Sombrero series.
But it's one of your favorites.
Yeah, I just like the color. You know, I don't know what it is about orange. Like out in the front of our house, we have some sun patients that are orange, and they just pop.
Right.
That color just shows up from a distance, and that's why I like those colors.
You know, that's one of the favorite mom color, too, because it kind of sets
like
fall tone.
It has that fall connotation, and that's why I like orange, too, when it comes to annuals, because you can kind of take them into the fall season if they're looking good. So right. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah, that's and we're not trying to rush fall, but
I think
everybody, especially with all the
as hot as it's been,
yeah,
oh,
it's going to be a hot August, and with the little ones going back to school already, it's time to look at some of those lawn issues, but also to look ahead about your landscape and how you want it to look in the fall. We'll come back and we'll talk about that in just a second. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back.
From dealing with our friendly woodland creatures to fixing a leaky faucet, here's what's bugging you with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys on B105.
So, Tony, what is bugging you?
I know what's been bugging a lot of homeowners, people especially who have petunias or maybe even geraniums.
Mm-hmm.
The good old tobacco budworm. That's bugging a lot of
people. Does it sit on the leaves and smoke?
Yeah, rolls up some big old cigars and says, hey, come on over. A little party over here. What they will do, they will just... they'll feast on your petunias, and that's what you're seeing. You're seeing that damage from the tobacco budworm. Mm-hmm. No fears, no worries, because a real easy fix here.
And
it's a biological fix, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
You can use one of two things. You can use Fertilume's Dipel Dust, which, it has BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, which is a bacterial insecticide.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about Dipel, not only can you use it here on your petunias or your geraniums and go after the tobacco budworm, it takes care of a lot of other types of worms. And the old nasty, gnarly tomato hornworm, you know, he's an ugly guy. he can feast on your tomato plants as well and do it rather quickly, as a matter of fact, or you can pick him off.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about Dipel, and again, this is another Fertilume product, is that it's safe to use on your vegetables. And that's a big concern amongst a lot of people, and you don't have to worry about any toxicity. and it works extremely well. I can't say it enough, but DiPel is really good. So there's a number of things you can use it for. Also, there are people out there that I was talking with a gentleman the other day, and they keep the old cabbage looper or cabbage worm off of the cabbage. He likes to use the liquid form of BT, which is Thuricide, which also, you know, it's Bacillus thuringiensis, and it comes in a concentrate, and you can mix it up. And he liked the fact that it gets down into the cabbage itself. So the tobacco budworm is what's been bugging a lot of people. And if you're seeing damage on your petunias and so forth, or your, you know, any of your, you know, your vegetables or, you know, your geraniums, that's the culprit.
That's the guy.
That's the guy. He's the one that's in the lineup. He's in the police lineup, the tobacco budworm. So that's what's been bugging a lot of people this week.
And a pretty easy fix, you said.
It's an easy fix. It's a safe fix. So that's my recommendation. And I'm sticking with it.
Good move.
Yeah.
If you have something bugging you, you can jump on our Facebook page, In and Around the House, post questions and post pictures, and we will get back with you. And do my best. It's a great way to stay connected.
And call me out if I miss you.
That
happens sometimes. I think sometimes you get on there and look at something, and it appears that it's been viewed. And when I see it, does it work like that? I get messed up with Facebook sometimes.
You're not alone.
Well, and I'm sorry, but I do.
Just when I think I have it figured out, there's an update that rolls along. Yeah. And then I'm all over again going, what does this do? Where does this go? What happened to that?
Yeah.
That's probably the one that gets to me most. What happened to this feature?
It happens often. You know, and while we're on Facebook, I did post a couple of photographs of some containers that they're on the back of our deck, you know, in our window box. And I'm not posting them up there to, like, be Mr. like I'm bragging or anything, but I just this year put some emphasis on using lantana.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've had a lot of, you know, we get these hot summers, and lantana is one of those annuals that will just bloom its head off. It gives you beautiful bloom production. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't stop. And the hotter it is, it doesn't require a lot of maintenance, it doesn't require a lot of water,
right?
But in our window box and some of our containers on the deck, it's just blooming its head off. And you can see we did the yellow lantana. And it's also a pollinator. And if you look on our Facebook page, had this really cool yellow tiger swallowtail butterfly come up and just hang out on the lantana. So you're getting all these benefits from lantana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes the heat, doesn't require a lot of attention, doesn't require a lot of water. And it will attract butterflies.
Nice.
And I just wanted to I merely shot those photos the other day just to show you that. The purple petunias with that yellow lantana, it's rocking. And we have periwinkle. It's in the center of the window box. These plants are holding up to the elements. And if you look at one of the containers that we have over on the deck, you can see where Tina went and used this. I love this. It's a lantana as well, but it's a variegated lantana. Really cool foliage.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of the pots, she's using scovola, which is another summer heat lover. And it gives you that beautiful blue bloom. So these color combinations and this variegated lantana with the yellow blooms and the red periwinkle, they all jive. They all play well together in this pot. And they look good. They mm-hmm. really do. So I know it's not difficult to take care of pots. One, if you're using the right soil mixes. Two, if you're deadheading your annuals, which increases more bloom production. And three, they like to be fertilized.
Mm.
Don't goose them. Just give them a feeding when they need it. Not too much. You know how it is? When you go to bed with a full belly, you ate too much.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of applies. But, you know, and one of my favorites, too, is Jack's Classic Petunia Feed.
Right.
If you have some petunias or you have some of the calibrachoas, when I say that, I'm talking about the million bells, the small miniature kind of looking petunias. They are junkies. They love iron. They're junkies. And Jack's petunia feed, the way it's structured with its analysis, and I'm talking about nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash, that all comes into play, and they will bloom their heads off. But if they're struggling, get the scissors out. Put the sombrero on, get ready for a siesta, and cut them, give them a haircut, and feed those babies.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Your new gardening phrase, don't goose them. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Karen on the line who's got a question about her knockout roses. And don't goose them, Karen. That's don't the new them. Phrase. So what do you got going on with your roses?
I have got something that I guess is basically eating my rose bushes. I have holes in my leaves. New growth will come up. It looks beautiful, but I don't know what is getting to them.
Probably.
I do not know what to put on them.
More than likely, you know, a couple things can eat on rose bushes, but what you're likely seeing is the rose slug, which is the sawfly larva. And what they'll do, I mean, they will just munch and munch and munch. Like they got a buzz on, they got the munchies. They just hang out on the foliage and they'll just eat away. And what you can use, and we say this, we talk about this often, is early in the spring, late winter, early spring, when you prune back your knockouts. Do you prune them back, by the way?
Well, yes, I did, but they need it now, but I didn't think that I should do it right now because I didn't want to kill them.
Oh, I'd cut them back. They'll bounce back.
Okay.
Yeah, but get into the habit of doing this and do this exactly this way, and you'll have beautiful rose bushes throughout the growing season. I'm not kidding you. One is late winter, early spring, trim them back to about 12 to 15 inches above the ground.
Okay.
Secondly, that's when I want you to use Fertilume's systemic tree and shrub drench. And this drench is an insecticide that you'll mix it up accordingly. When you mix it up, it's going to be 3 ounces per foot height of plant to a gallon of water or 2 gallons of water. Now, here's what we need to do. We need to estimate or predict what that rose bush is growing to throughout the season. So when you mix this up, I don't want you just to use 3 ounces and think that's enough. That rose bush is going to get at least 3 to 4 foot. So let's say 3. So therefore, we need 9 ounces to a gallon to 2 gallons of water, mix it up thoroughly, and pour it in slowly around the base of your rose bush. That's going to protect it against these pesky fellows, the rose slug, for 1 year.
Okay.
And then I want you to fertilize your rose bushes with Rose Tone. It's a granular fertilizer. It's organic. It's eating well. And do that monthly, and you will have beautiful rose bushes. Now, provided they're getting, you know, a couple other things, provided they're getting adequate sun, and secondly, it's your responsibility and due diligence to, you know, keep those deadheaded and pruned out so you encourage new bloom buds to come on.
Okay.
And you will have nice-looking rose bushes, and if you don't, you call me back and give me the what for.
Well, I'm out there constantly, like when the blooms die off, I'm out there constantly with scissors. And I nip those off.
You said scissors wrong. It's scissors.
Scissors, okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, just cut down into them to a couple leaf nodes and wait them to come out. They will cycle, you know. You'll get these cycle bloom periods. But if you do those couple of things, you will have stellar-looking rose bushes. The only time you will not prune back your rose bushes in the late winter, early spring, is if they are climbers. Those are the exception to the rule.
Okay.
And then you follow up with us next spring, and you let us know what you think. I wouldn't be afraid to cut them back now.
Okay. It's not good. It won't hurt them then at all.
No, not at all. And, you know, fertilize them. And actually, as we get towards the tail end of the summer, going into the fall months, you'll see some great growth on it because rose bushes prefer cooler temperatures. So,
well, because I know the one is like wanting to go sideways, and I had actually put a stick on it because, like I said, I was afraid to cut it back because I didn't want to kill it.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean it wants to go sideways? Has it been drinking? What's going on?
The stem is just really, really big, heavy wise.
Uh huh. So it's real thick.
Right.
Woody. So they've been there for a while.
Well, no, actually, it's only been there probably about 2 years.
Okay.
And, I mean, I have fertilized. I do get a lot of blooms on them.
Mm-hmm.
Even with these, with the holes in the leaves and that, I'm still getting a lot of blooms.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I like the foliage on the bushes, too,
right,
without the holes in them.
Right. Well, let it finish up its bloom cycle, and as it starts to, like, fade a little bit, then make the trim it back.
Okay.
You don't have to go into it deep or heavy or hard, but, you know, trim it back. It'll put on some new, nice, lush growth, and you'll enjoy some of that foliage that you're talking about that you so much like.
All right, then.
And you know, follow up with us, okay?
All right, then. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
All right. Goodbye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And Tony, we got another guy on the line who's got another weed question for you. And I apologize, I've forgotten your name. And a Crepe Myrtle comment, too.
Sure.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Sorry, what was your name?
Jack.
Hi, Jack. Hi, Jack. So what kind of weeds do you have?
Well, I'm trying to get straight in my head. I'm okay with the weed-free zone. I understand about the yard and the grass and everything else. But in my flower beds,
mm-hmm,
what do I use in my flower beds, and what do I use in my garden?
In your flower beds, and when you say flower beds, I'm assuming that you're talking about beds that are well defined. They have maybe some shrubs in them and some other things, right?
Right. And okay. a lot of perennials and okay, not many annuals.
Okay. Now, in your flower beds, you can use like Roundup or you can use Kilsall. All right, you don't need to go or get fancy and use things that are selective because we don't have any lawn or turf in your landscape beds. So one of those two products will suffice, and whatever they get on, they'll injure or kill. Now, Jack, what I want you to keep in mind when you are using these products in your landscape beds, you mentioned you have perennials that are close by.
Right.
You have to be diligent about putting these products on the weeds that you're trying to get rid of without getting them on your perennials, or they're going to injure the perennial as well, or possibly kill it. Now, if things are relatively close, I say this all the time, it's real easy. What you can do is purchase a pair of heavy-duty rubber gloves and just simply get a sponge and dip it into your mixture or spray the sponge and wipe it on the weed you're trying to get rid of without risking getting any overspray on any of your desirables.
So I have an idea where if I cut the bottom out of a bucket and put it around protected my plant, then I could just spray around it.
You could do that. You could use a piece of cardboard. Yes, you can certainly do that. Or you can, you know, hey, pull them. You know, pull things that are closer or closest to your perennials or your desirables or your shrubs, and then spray what's far enough away without risking any overspray or getting, you know, anything on those shrubs. Are you able to do that, or is it growing up?
That's a lot of getting down the ground working, and I don't
yes,
like
it is.
I'm
no, no,
not a young fella anymore.
No, nor am I. And that is why we talk a lot about high yields, dimension, which is a pre-emergent, and keeping that in your landscape beds and putting it down at least twice a year.
Is that similar to the Preem product they have?
It is. And in my humble opinion, I find it to be better than Preem. It's less expensive than Preem, and it lasts longer than Preem.
Okay.
And, you know, we need to go after the weed issues like that from a pre-emergent standpoint at least twice a year, you know, sometime in March and late summer, early fall, which I'm getting ready to put my next application of Dimension down in my landscape beds. And it works extremely well. And once you spread it out, you know, water it in, and that keeps a lot of these annual winter weeds that are going to want to creep in and germinate this fall.
Back to the weed-free zone stuff.
Uh-huh.
Will that hurt my annual plants if I use it in my flower beds?
Well, you really don't want to use weed-free zone in your flower beds.
Okay.
You know, let's just say you have grassy weeds or grass in your flower beds. Weed-free zone is not going to kill the grass because it's a selective herbicide. It's only going after broadleaf weeds.
Okay.
You might have some grassy things in your.
Yeah, I got a lot of liriope.
You don't want to spray your liriope at all.
Right.
But save your weed-free zone for the lawn.
Okay.
Okay.
I get a lot of nut grass comes up between my liriope.
Oh, that's not good, because that poses a problem, and that is, how do you treat it without...
When you pull it, you burst the seeds in the ground.
Is that now, the nuts edge he's talking about?
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. If it's really bad, Jack, I would take a spade, and I would lift that clump out, that I would lift the liriope out and everything, and put a new liriope plant in.
Okay.
You know, because sometimes when you're trying to dance around a perennial like liriope and get rid of the nuts edge just growing up in between it, I mean, come on. Good luck. You know, that's...
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather be out golfing?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm with you. So, you know, there's these things that we need to do that will, you know, save us some time in the long run. I know nuts edge is crazy.
Yeah.
It really is. It just, you wonder sometimes where the heck it comes from.
Yeah, I've been, you know, winning the battle sometimes, but it just seems to find its way back.
It does. And I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
And I know what's worked for me in the past. And, you know, there, I want to say it's called sulfentrazone. If you can look for a product with sulfentrazone in it, that helps with nuts edge as well. And I like halosulfuron, which is the active ingredient that's in Nut Sedge Killer, or it's in Sedge Hammer.
Yeah.
But the problem with it is, and I'm not talking this product down, because it's a great product and it's highly effective and it works. When you mix up a gallon of that, it's all or none. And when I say that, you can't keep some of that in your tank sprayer and spray it next week. It's lost its effectiveness.
Okay.
And so if anyone's doing that, that is another reason why you might not be successful with nuts edge. It loses its effectiveness. So really, it's all or none. So if you don't have enough to spray a gallon with, or, you know, make sure you have enough to spray at least a half gallon, or help your neighbors out and say, hey, I got this mixture. I don't want to let it sit and go to waste. Let's use it. Because your neighbors, too.
Is that true with that? I think Fruity Room puts out a product that is nut. For nut sedge grass or whatever.
It's under the high yield label called Nut Sedge Killer. It's in a red and yellow box. Yes, that is halosulfuron, and that is a one and done. It's a great product.
But it won't. It doesn't have any shelf life in the tank.
No.
So you got to use it. And,
right. And okay. I think sometimes people fall victim to that. You know. Well. And then, you know, the other element that comes into play here, too, Jack, is that, you know, you need to use a spreader sticker. You know, we talk about that.
I add some dish soap when I mix them up.
Okay. Perfect.
So.
Perfect. Yeah. You know, stay the course. Boy, it's one of those cumbersome things. And you know, I've shared in your aches and pains with that as well, as most homeowners.
Okay. What about in the vegetable garden?
Well, in the vegetable garden, it's this. I'm gonna tell you like it is. I walk a fine line, and when I say that, I'm really careful about what I use in my little vegetable garden, and I don't use Roundup. I don't use things like that. I care about what I'm consuming, and I'll get in there and physically pull weeds. You know, I'll also mulch with newspaper and straw to help keep weeds suppressed. So when it comes to the garden element of things, you know, things I'm eating or consuming, or perhaps if you have grandchildren and so forth,
right?
My recommendation is to keep it as clean as possible, and get them
just
to think
on work and stay up with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, you can use a pre-emergent. That Preen makes, and it's called corn gluten, which is effective, but you need to use it more often, and that can get a little pricey. You know, that's another option as well. You know, and also I don't want to rule this out either. Someone's going to call in or going to call me out on this, but from a top burn standpoint, you can mix vinegar with water.
And there's a little recipe around here. Where it tells you, You mix a gallon of this stuff. You go spray on a dewy morning. You go spray in the morning. You come back at night, it'll be gone.
Yeah. Well, so. Somebody dropped off something in the garden center to us the other day. I wasn't there to meet with who it was. And it was an organic product to kill weeds. And I'll tell you what. I know the organic approach doesn't always get down into the root. I can tell you that firsthand, and people can argue that with me tooth and nail. I used it. It gave the it was a top burn, and several days later the plant was back.
Yeah,
that, I'm just telling you the facts. I don't have that product in front of me, but it looked like it was doing its stuff, and like that's the real deal. But what I sprayed, it didn't kill it totally out. It just gave the top burn. And it's like the old product that used to be out there called Finale. It was a top burn.
Yeah.
And that's what's in Roundup, too, versus Kills-All when we talk about these things. You'll see Roundup say...
we're talking about, they get on the foliage, and then they go down and kill the root.
That's when you're a systemic, yes, like glyphosate.
Now, do these contaminate the ground at all, or if they're...
You know, it's a great question. There's a lot of controversy over this. You will hear a group of people say, yes, it does contaminate the ground, and you will hear some say, no, it's plant-related only. And, you know, there's so many arguments for and against. I don't know. It's like I walk a fine line, and like I was explaining to you about your vegetable garden.
Yeah.
You know, because of this... That's why I use the old pooling method. You know, I don't spray those chemicals in my garden. You know, we get enough of that as it is. You know, we don't know where things are coming from.
Right,
from the
grocery. You don't want to be eating that stuff.
No.
We're messed up enough with what we end up having.
And I'm not here to say what it is or what it isn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a fact, people approaching things from an organic standpoint, it's here. It's not a fad. It's going to stay. It really is. I see a lot of young mothers coming to the garden center, and I have a line of organics. And I know other garden centers here locally do, too. We care about the environment, and we need to be stewards of the earth and just be responsible. So, you have great questions. That's, you know, I hope I helped you there with some of that.
You did. Everything just kind of runs together, and okay, I got a garden, I got a, you know, and
it
I got
does.
A weed killer, and...
Mm-hmm. Hell,
so
it does.
I wanted to get all straight on all three of them, so my mind was clear when I'm dealing with them.
And feel free to call us anytime or send us a message on Facebook or, you know, email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. I answer all the emails. Sometimes without me getting long and winded in emails, I always ask people to give me a contact number. You know, so I can talk to you about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to type up a 2-page summary, but I hope that helps. And you know, it's like power equipment. You know, some you got to mix the oil with the gas, some you don't. Some you got to prime with the primer bulb, some you don't. You know,
a few years ago, I got the Arbor Day people sent me a packet of sticks.
Uh huh.
You know, planted them.
Yeah.
And there was 2 crepe myrtles in there, so I got them established in my garden first, then I planted them out on the hill.
Uh-huh.
Exposed to too much stuff, but anyway, they seem to do okay the first couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple years ago, the winter just destroyed them. I thought they were gone.
Did they eventually come back?
Well, I listened to your program and heard some stuff about them, and I ended up going out there, and I had just kind of given up, and I cut them off all the way to the ground. I didn't dig them up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lo and behold, they're shooting up out of the ground.
Yeah, they'll do that, and that's to be expected.
Like you were saying earlier today, but what I did last year, I didn't know we were having a mild winter. I put 4 stakes around it, at about a foot and a half square, and I filled it with leaves.
Okay, so like a wind barrier.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. the leaves are generating heat almost like a compost pile. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway, the stem stayed green and had kept life in them, and they're doing wonderful this year.
Mm-hmm.
And other than the fact they're doing good, I wanted to mention that I was surprised that they start to green up and don't get foliage till really late.
Yeah, they're a little slow to get.
It's almost like the end middle of May or end of May before you even see any foliage on them.
Yeah, it could take a little while. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're like just, waiting on them.
Mm-hmm. Just right now, they begin to bloom.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're very late, and I mean, I thought when I was growing these things, but these things are dead. They're not growing, and everything else is growing, and that finally they green up. And anyway, I was surprised about that and wanted to get that out there.
No, and thank you very much, by the way. And, you know, it's a perfect testimonial, you know, in the gardening world. A lot of times we feel compelled to act quickly, but patience is definitely of a virtue there. And you were patient enough to wait it out. Well, thanks for the call, Jack. Enjoy your weekend. All right, buddy.
Thank you. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Mario on the line. We've got a lawn issue that we'll come to right out of the break. We need the pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Mary on the line. Thanks for hanging on, Mary. You have a lawn issue or some weeds in your grass? What's going on?
I wish it was weeds. I actually have mushroom.
Mushroom?
Not the little itty-bitty ones. These things have like a 2-inch top on them.
You don't have the fun ones. You have the annoying.
The fun ones.
And now it's like, really? Could I have something that's somewhat useful?
Well, yeah. You know, a lot of that, you probably really noticed those popping up after that last rainfall we had.
I mean, we had them periodically here and there, but now I've got the front yard is not very big, and then I've got a big tree in the front yard. I think they said it's a gum tree.
Oh, yeah, sweet gum?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It shades the whole yard.
Yeah, little spiny balls.
Yeah. No, there's no little spiny balls. I mean, it's just a big tree.
Okay.
So I love the tree, and I'm like, don't make me cut the tree down, please. No, not at all.
Actually, you know, when we get a lot of moisture like we've had off and on, and not everybody has been getting the same amount of moisture. It's all been sporadic. You know, like over in northern Kentucky a week and a half ago, gosh, I mean, if our garden center was a boat out on the water, we would have gone to the bottom.
Oh.
We had so much water. It was like a monsoon.
Wow.
But anyway, nothing to be alarmed about. You know, they'll dissipate. What's happening is it's a lot of decaying matter that's under the soil surface that with the right amount of moisture and humidity and temperature levels, we see these mushrooms pop up.
Okay. And, I mean, I've got like rows of them.
Yeah, no. And you know, sometimes too, even if you had some old trees there at one point in time in the past, as the root system or structure of that tree starts to decay, you know, just everything comes into play and we have mushroom activity. So,
big storm. So I don't mean to be, the grass is even dead around the air underneath there.
Well, a lot of that probably has to do with
light of day at all. So I figured that was why that was going on.
That's part of it as well. And as long, you know, what's really important, Mary, is that as long as your tree's healthy, the canopy looks healthy and all that good stuff, I wouldn't be worrying about what's going on underneath. Sometimes if the canopy was getting sparse and thin or you were losing part of this tree, then seeing the mushroom activity underneath would be an indicator that things are on the decline, you know. So other than that, it sounds good. I wouldn't worry about it. If you have little ones with those mushrooms popping up, get up before the kids do, pull them, you know, put on a pair of gloves and pull them up and throw them away so they're not being curious as to what they are and stick them in their mouth.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So I just go ahead and pull them up and we're good to go?
Yeah, no worries.
Oh, good.
Let it run its course.
I thought, oh, Lord, what has my hair become?
No, you're fine.
Oh, good. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
I will. You too.
Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Brenda on the line. Hi, Brenda. What was your question?
Good morning.
Morning.
Wondering how to get rid of mold.
Oh. Normally, I get out there and
Ernie always goes to see his dermatologist.
I get out in my lawn and do my wicked mold ninja extraction move, but it hadn't worked yet. But I have to tell you that I finally got frustrated with it. I tried the water trick. That didn't work. And I tried a couple of traps, and that didn't work. So we went down to see Tony, and you can get to your local home and garden center. They'll all have these, I'm pretty sure. But with the
the what was it, the poison worms?
Uh-huh, from Tomcat.
Yeah, from those Tomcat.
Those are effective.
And my wife got after it, and we found the most recent runs, and the way you do that is to get out and tramp down those places where they pushed up on the ground.
Right.
And then you'll see where they'll push up some fresh soil, and you'll just open that up, drop those down, cover it back over, and it more than likely will help your issues there. What part of town do you live in?
It's Lake Winoka.
Oh.
Right on the, yeah, we've never had any, and now we have them everywhere.
It is beautiful out there.
Yeah.
I've never been there.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Where is this exactly?
It's out east and Sardinia.
Okay.
Our one friend from Sardinia.
Cindy, where has Cindy been? I've not seen her photograph on a milk carton. We've not heard from Cindy, so she's not missing.
Yeah, so.
But, you know, going back to Ernie's right, you know, the tomcat, those little poisonous worms are very effective. And also, you know, other than that, trapping. But what's key to being successful with moles is identifying the main highway, main tunnel runs, and then
right.
That's where you'll start.
Okay.
But Ernie's got a lot of mole experience.
And really, we have not seen a recurrence since we tackled that earlier in the spring.
Well, I can give you our address. You can come help us.
There you go, Ernie.
I have some friends, Bob and Carol, out there at Lake Winoka, and we try to get out there once in a while and just absolutely love it. One of the cool things about the lake out there is that at sunset it becomes a no-wake. Is that still the fact?
Yes.
It becomes a no-wake area, and it just settles down. It's gorgeous out there.
Absolutely beautiful. We've only been there a couple months, but we love it.
And so we need to find a garden center out there close to you.
Over on the east side?
Yeah.
You know, Burgers, aren't they? Well, they're a little northeast, aren't they? You know, I tell you what, Bob, Bard's, they're over on the east side, aren't they?
Right,
Bard's,
yeah.
Bard's, yeah, Nursery. Bard's Nursery.
But Tomcat is what you're looking for, the brand name.
Okay.
And, find the most recent run, drop them in, and that should help you.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good weekend and good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have been covering a lot of ground today and talking to an awful lot of people. It's been fantastic. And, Tony, I noticed a couple of things you posted on Facebook. Those are beautiful plants there on your deck and around your house. But what is going on with that dryer? You need me help come over and maybe point out a few things that I don't know anything about?
I can take this thing apart and put it back together in my sleep.
Is that right?
I've been working on it for off and on, you know, for this past week. Our dryer quit functioning. It has electric power to it, and you know, and of course I'm on the cheap side. You always say I like to pay the utility companies, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, sometimes it might be a thermostat or whatever, a quick fix. You know, you might buy a part. There's a parts place, appliance parts place up here on Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be called Pure Sauce. I think it's now Dayton Appliance Parts.
Okay,
but you can find anything up there under the sun. However, as I took my dryer apart, they make this stuff in such a way that they charge you so much for parts, they don't want you fixing these things.
Oh,
and I'll give you the perfect example. So as I went through all this, you know, I checked the thermostat. I checked the thermostat cutoff, the thermometer,
The what?
There's a thing called a thermometer that, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, that kind of relates. I tested everything. And everything's good.
Uh-huh.
And then I went back to the control board.
So what do you test it with?
Well, I'm using my ohm meter.
Okay.
I'm checking for continuity. I'm checking for ohms and so forth.
Using your own meter. You don't have to borrow one.
I have a meter. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, on the pins on the control board, P3 and P4. And this thing here, they're so simple. It just makes me angry. Well, guess how much the control board is. So the control board is bad because it says if the ohm meter reading is between 1 and 6, replace the control board.
Are you about to say, wait, there's more?
No, the ohm meter was like 1.8. So it's telling me that the control board's bad.
Right.
So you know how much the control board is?
$19.99.
It's $207 is the cheapest, all the way up to $307.
You could buy a new dryer
for that. You know, really? I'm like, really?
Yeah. And you must have very clean clothes because I don't see that is the cleanest dryer.
You know what? Well, I took this thing apart, you know, and that, you know, I had the belt off, the idler arm, and all that stuff. And my dad's just shaking his head. He's like, "You got more patience than I have."
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know, I do, but, you know, and you can see some of the wiring. You see, I marked that one wire with the red
tape.
Yeah. So I know that's on that side, you know, but everything's checked out other than the control board. And I'm so aggravated. You know, I
what did you do? You get a new control board?
Well, I can. And I've also found used ones that are recycled from a guy that sells paint and such out in Oregon for $109. And I'm like, this doesn't sound right, you know? So do I risk buying the control board for $207? Where I can go out and buy another comparable dryer. I don't want all the fancy buttons. You can see this one kind of was. You know, I don't need the sound indicator to be on, you know, low, medium, and high pitch. I don't need all those bells and whistles.
Yeah.
I just want to dry clothes.
Sure.
All right. And most of the times, we'll run stuff through the dryer briefly and hang it.
Yeah.
But, you know, give me a break. I am so aggravated with the cost of some things. They almost practically force you into buying a new wash machine or a dryer.
We've become a throwaway society.
We really have. We really have. And, you know, for example, this part's $207. I can buy another wash or another dryer, another Kenmore, for $599. And this part is 34% of the cost of a new one.
Mm-hmm. You know, I got away with it for a little while. We wound up getting a new washer and dryer from out at Hagedorn's not long ago.
Yeah.
And I was confused by most of it. And would just stand in front of it and go, I have no idea what all this stuff does. I'd like to help you with laundry, sweetheart, but at this thing looks like a flight.
It's like a cockpit. You got to go to dryer simulator school. Really? You know, all these, you have to go to dryer or washer simulator school, and it's a 2-week crash course, so you know how to operate this stuff. I guarantee you half the people don't use all those functions.
You
really don't.
Yeah. I had trouble with off and on the old one, but Lisa
off and on the old one. I hear you. But, you know, this thing is so simple. I'm so aggravated that, you know, it's come down to this because really the continuity checkout on the heater element and everything is fine and dandy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the control board.
Right. Well, you did a great job. It looks really nice.
It's back together, but now I just, And you know what? The Sears is really Whirlpool.
Uh-huh.
And as I watched a lot of things on YouTube, which is a great tool, by the way, it's just you watch some guys tear something apart and they're not as careful about the parts and pieces where they dismantle them and
I didn't know.
Around.
I didn't know anybody was filming me working on some stuff because that's me.
All right,
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a beautiful run of about 4 or 5 days here. A lot of the heat and humidity is going to be gone. Lots of sunshine. And temperatures hovering in the low to mid-80s for the next 3 or 4 days. It's perfect for you to get out in your landscape beds in your yard, get some things done.
I'm liking it.
Yeah. And Tony also posted some beautiful pictures of the planters.
Oh, thank you.
On your porch. Very nice indeed.
You know, I didn't do that. I mean, they look relatively good considering this time of year and as hot as it's been. And I certainly didn't do it. They're like, oh... But it was the lantana, you know, I kind of gravitated this year, you know, Tina and I, towards, you know, using lantana a little bit more in our stuff. And it, boy, has it paid off.
Yeah.
You know, choosing the right plants in the right situation. And on our deck, it gets quite hot. You know, the wood absorbs that heat and pulls the heat. And, you know, the lantana has been stellar. The scovola that, in fact, is in a couple of those pots on the deck. Has held up extremely well, and she used the variegated lantana, which that variegation in the foliage just gives things a different look. And you can see that yellow tiger swallowtail that is feeding up there, getting a little bit of pollen up there off the lantana on the window box. So, you know, those things all come into play, and you're using pollinators, and you're attracting different things, and it's just fun to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is a point in the year where it's, you know, even though we have a great forecast for the next couple of days, it's hazy, it's hot, it's humid. Some of our planters are looking a little worn, and there's still plenty of time to kind of gussy them up just a little bit.
I like that, gussy them up.
You're going to gussy them up.
And also, we're not far away from mom season. You're going to start seeing some moms out there that are available. And just to give you a little insight, a lot of those moms have been forced. They've been shaded. And if you're looking for color, you're having some people over, or you're just in need of refurbishing some of those tired, worn-out old pots or planters, you know, it works. But when you start looking for a nice mom plant, let me tell you this. Those that are blooming now, or you're starting to see now that they've pushed to get the jump on the early mom sales, other than you having a get-together with family and friends and trying to get some color, you won't get that longevity out of them. You know, they're not going to take you into the fall season. So look for those as they start to come on naturally, as a lot of the local growers and nurseries and garden centers will have this upcoming fall season. And look for those that have nice, rounded symmetry to them. When you see that with a mum plant, when you're at a local garden center or nursery, that is an indicator that they were grown correctly. They were spaced. They weren't grown for numbers, you know, we got to produce 500,000 or 10,000. Sure. You know, that's where they're all tall and a little narrow and lanky and spindly looking. You know, you're looking for that nice, rounded mum look.
I don't think I've had anybody describe me as tall and lanky and spindly
looking. Oh, every day. Every day. But, you know, we're not far from mom season, nor, as we were talking earlier in the show today, too, we want to put the bug in your ear to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. It's time to start thinking about our lawn. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the lawn, the fall is the best time to get in on a Fertilum three-step program. That's the orange bag, lawn food plus iron. We're only a couple of weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
Have it on deck. Be ready, because when you do it around Labor Day weekend, you're going to see that nice greening power. Bring that lawn back to green and make it shine and make everybody in your neighborhood lawn envy.
That's right. And also jump on our Facebook page. We were talking about moms. We have a great video there of our visit with Todd out at Baton's and some of their mom production, which is in full swing right now. Tony?
Oh, yeah. A lot of mom production out there.
We have Lou on the line who's got a question about his lawn. Hi, Lou.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for holding on.
I'm assuming this is a summer-type grass coming up in my yard. It's a much lighter green than, you know, my rest of my lawn earlier in the year. And I don't believe it's a crabgrass because the heads on crabgrass, and it's not that I don't have some, typically have a long, skinny-type head on them. This is more of a short, round head. I don't know if it's a foxtail. And is there any way to control it?
Yeah, there are ways to control things like that. When you say it's a light green color, does it outgrow the rest of the lawn after you mow it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you know, you see it later in the summer, during the summer. You know, in the beginning of the year,
it's not as prevalent. Right.
Yeah, or at least you can't tell. But now it's much lighter than, you know, my other grass in my lawn.
Kind of in a little patch or spotty and sparse in certain areas.
You mean where it comes up?
Yeah, do you have a patch of it, or is it in?
It's everywhere.
Yeah. You know, here's what I want you to do first and foremost. You know, sometime this morning, go outside and pull one. Just tug on it, pull it out, and I want you to look at the stem real carefully.
Right.
If it's triangular in shape, that is an indicator, telltale sign that it's nuts edge.
Okay, I know what nuts edge is.
Okay, so it's not nuts edge, okay.
No, it's a grass.
It's a grass.
And the heads, to me, you know, the seed head, is similar to what I call a larger foxtail, but it's shorter. And, you know, it's a round, and it's, you know, one seed head versus, like, if I think, you know, crabgrass, typically the seed head shoots up and then makes, like, three very narrow seed pods on, or whatever they refer to them as.
You know, can you do me a favor?
Sure.
You know, could you send me a photograph of it?
Yeah, probably could. Yeah, take it with my phone and send it to you.
Yeah, yeah. You can put it on our Facebook page or you can email me.
Okay. Well, what's your email?
It is in and around the house, one word.
In and around
the house.
Right.
At b105.com. And I'll get right back with you here in a bit. I like to see it. Take a couple photos from a little bit from a distance and up a little close.
Okay.
You know, there's also, you know, I wouldn't say it's light green. You know, there's nimble wheel activity going on in lawns. And nimble wheel is really tough to get rid of. I'm seeing a lot of crabgrass in lawns, which when you look at crabgrass early in the morning, too, it has a little bit of a lighter green sheen to it.
Right. And sweet crabgrass, you know, kind of lays flat branches out.
This, yeah, it's a little flat.
This is like when you mow this type of grass,
mm-hmm.
even in the middle of the afternoon when it's really hot and dry,
mm-hmm.
It has a lot of moisture in it, and you know, it doesn't mow very well.
And it might be a type of a bluegrass called...
No, it's... I don't think
it is. You don't think...
It's a wider leaf.
It's a wider... Okay, because there's a Poa trivialis to what give you a little bit lighter color, too, a type of bluegrass. But I'd have to see this. I like to see it. And if you can do that, I'll certainly... I'll get back with you before day's end.
Okay, well, I'll try to take a picture of it and try to find one that hasn't been mowed off that has, like, a head on it, too.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Chris on the line who's having some issues with her elephant ears.
Ooh.
What kind of problems are you having, Chris?
Well, it seems like, they get a lot of sun, and they're in a good place. I had them there last year. But I was told that if you plant plants from last year in the same spot, they don't grow better. Well, I end up buying more elephant ears, and they haven't even came up.
What type of elephant ears are we? Are they the uprights or just a standard?
They're the uprights.
Okay. When you bought those, was the bulb nice and firm, or was it soft and mushy? Okay.
Oh, no. It was nice and firm, yeah.
And when and how long ago did you plant these?
I planted them before spring.
Before spring?
Like, after the first frost.
Okay, so like after the middle of May.
Right.
Okay. Well, you know, you should, have they broken dormancy or no?
Yes.
So they have broken, okay. Well, I tell you what, the uprights take a lot of effort and a lot of heat to really get it going. They really, really do.
So what do you feed them? I mean, do you feed them anything?
Well, yeah, yes you can. You know, I like to use Plantone.
Yeah.
From Espoma. Yeah. And it's just a good, you know, feeding. It's just a good all around organic fertilizer. So every time it rains or you water, you know, it does the job. Now, are these in the ground or are they in a container? You said a container, I thought.
No, they're in the ground.
They're in the ground.
Yeah. Now, see, I was told that, like, before fall, you're supposed to dig them up.
You let a frost get to them, right. Or you don't have to. Go ahead.
Oh, you don't have to?
Well, the way I've overwintered elephant ears has been like this, and a lot of people do it this way, is I will lift it, and I will put it in a sizable container that will accommodate the root ball when I dig it up, and I will cut all the foliage off except for one small stem. Always want a leaf on it growing or showing growth. And when you bring it in, you know, you can take it to the basement or the garage and make sure it gets as much light as possible. And you don't want to keep it overly wet throughout the winter months. You're not going to water it like you do when it's in the ground. Because once they start putting on some size, they're going to take some moisture.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to take a lot of moisture. And, you know, I also like to use, you know, some really good compost with that when I plant. You know, just so it holds moisture and it also helps provide with some drainage. But, you know, that's one way of storing them. Some people will allow a frost to get to them and knock them back, and then they'll cut all the old foliage off, and they'll store it in the basement or in a container. And the only time I would encourage you not to plant anything of the same species in the same spot as the prior season is if you had some disease issues.
No, I don't have none of that.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, a lot of times too, depending upon how things grow and kick off early in the season, is really dictated a lot too by the size of the bulb.
Oh, well, they was pretty big. I mean, they was bigger than
a
softball, bigger than that.
It should have been at least the size of a softball or larger.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is quite larger than a golf ball, but
right.
You know, did you buy them from a reputable garden company or a garden center nursery?
I bought them from the nursery.
Okay.
In Hamilton, up in Hamilton. Okay. A lady brought them to me, and she's like, Chris, these are some good plants. You need to plant them in your yard.
Okay.
So I did that, and, like, they're small. Like, they're not really big.
How tall are they right now?
I say, if I look outside, I say they're probably maybe, I say about 4 or 5 inches high.
Oh, yeah. Something happened. Something definitely happened there. You know, the other thing, too, is if they were put in the ground, they will not break dormancy until they really get a lot of heat. And just for future purposes, what I'd like for you to do next season, I'd like for you to start one inside and maybe put it on a heat mat and getting them started and then transplanting them outside after the last average frost.
Okay.
You could have had them in a little too early, and maybe the ground was staying wet for too long. We did get a lot of rain in May. May was not kind to us. May was cool, and we had a lot of soggy, wet ground situations or conditions, and I know we had a frost there May 15th or 16th. You know, that bulb could have rotted and not really gotten off to a very good start. You know what I would do at this point in time, I would lift it and look at and inspect the bulb. And if it looks mushy or if the roots are really dark and brown and not healthy and white or creamy in color, then something definitely happened to it.
Right.
And at this point in time, we're in the middle of August. You should have seen some noticeable growth other than what you're telling me.
Right, right.
Yeah, I would lift it, and then I would go see your friend and ask her where her source was with this.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And you know what? Follow up with us on this, okay?
Let us know.
Yeah, I'd like to know what that looks like. Take a photo. Under the soil surface, something's not right. You didn't bury them too deep, did you?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. How far do you bury them?
You know what? When I plant them, I leave the neck up above the ground.
Maybe that's why.
And here's why this came to thought is because if water gets down into that neck and stays wet, especially underground, it could have softened the bulb and rotted it out. That's why I want you to lift it.
Okay, I'll lift it and I'll send it to you.
All right. Thank you.
Just send me a photo. You don't need to send me the bulb. Have a great weekend.
All right, okay. Thanks, Chris.
Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And boy, we have covered a lot of ground today about the elephant ears, some weed issues, roses. We've had
a lot of place.
And it's also the heart of the tomato season. And, we were talking earlier in the show about your love of tomatoes, but there are some issues, some blocks.
A little bit, yeah. You know, it's funny you say that because the other day someone had sent us a couple of photographs of their tomatoes on Facebook, and they had all these little black specks all over it. And when you see the black specks and sometimes with a little white halo around it, you know, that may be an indicator that it's bacterial canker. So,
boy, that just sounds awful.
Yeah, it's like an old canker sore you get in the mouth, you know. Also, if you see little black dots with these, like, sunken lesions in your tomatoes, you know, usually that's an indicator of anthracnose. If you're seeing the bottoms of your fruit where it's black and sunken on the ends, you know, on the very bottom, that's blossom end rot.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of things that come into play and that can go awry with tomatoes. And we need to be careful of, you know, how we're growing and where we're growing. And when I say that, it's like this, you know, you want to rotate things, you know. The, you know, the cucumbers, you know, they're related to the tomato plant, you know. Sure. So it's where things are in close proximity to one another, too, where some of these issues can come about. And when you start seeing these kind of things, it's like you might back off. You might start growing some of your tomato plants in containers the next season. Also, you know, mulch. When you mulch your garden beds, what happens is a lot of times, too, a lot of people, they're not diligent about, you know, being clean or keeping the garden cleaned up at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And they'll just allow all these plants to winter over and lie around in the garden. And guess what? All those diseases, they just lie there and they, you know, work their way and stay in the soil. And next year, when you pull everything up and clean everything out, you really, in fact, did not. And then when you plant and you start getting these hard rains, these torrential downpours, those rain splatters, or the raindrop splatter, I should say, against the soil and displaces those spores and gets it all moving around. And then we're back to where we were.
Right.
And you can start spraying with fungicides like copper fungicide or mancozeb. And you got to do it prior to these things occurring. And certainly do not can any tomatoes that have blemishes on them.
Okay.
You know, cut them out and chop them up and make a saucer or something with them. Or just cut the bad ones up and have some friends you don't like over. Oh, man. You know, now come on.
Ernie, I know.
But
you know, so the old thing about this is where I've always grown my tomatoes. That might work for a short time, but eventually it's going to cause
you. It does. And you know, someone's going to be on the other end saying, gosh, Tony, I live in the inner city. I only have this spot, so I have no choice.
Right.
I understand that. So then you have no choice.
Right.
But, you know, grow disease-resistant varieties. You know, when you're growing heirlooms, the heirloom varieties are not as disease-resistant, and therefore, you know, they can be stricken with some of those, you know, disease issues and so forth. So that all comes into play.
So, for instance, if they're in an area where they only have just a small place to work with and they're having some issues with that, can they remove a certain part of that soil? And
you can, but I would go down pretty far.
How far?
You know, I would dig out about 10 inches. You know, I mean, that's cumbersome work.
Yeah.
It really is.
And what are you going to do with that soil?
Well, yeah, you would be better off, you know, at that point in time, if you get a lot of sun in that area, what a lot of people will do is they'll take a piece of plastic and they'll pin it down and use that solarization method to where it heats up so much it kills all the bacteria and those pathogens.
Oh,
and
you
then
can do
start
that.
Over. Yes, you can certainly do that.
Clear plastic or the black?
I would probably use black.
That's going to heat it up a lot quicker.
It's going to heat it up a lot quicker, yes.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, then when you forego, you know, growing in that spot and you're using black plastic on there and using that solarization element to heat up the soil enough to kill a lot of the germs or the bacteria in there or the pathogens, then go off to the side and plant in containers. And come back the following season and see if you don't notice a difference.
So I guess if you're using containers to grow your tomatoes, then you have the opportunity to remove that soil, put new soil in.
Yeah, and if you're having issues in containers with tomatoes, which you very well could, or you think that you are, discard that soil. Thoroughly clean out your container and use one part Clorox to nine parts water. And just sanitize it, and then start over. Provide for good drainage, and then go from there.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right.
That's a great suggestion.
You know, a lot of times we get these issues with tomatoes, and a lot of it's environmental. A lot of it has to do with moisture at given times throughout the growing season, temperature, humidity, and it all comes into play. So, you know, that was a great little part on your behalf to talk about tomatoes, because I've seen a lot of weird things. And I've had some friends give me tomatoes not long ago, not Vicky, that had anthracnose on them. I know what it is.
Yeah,
it's cut out around it.
That's right.
Yeah, it's all right. I can deal with it. But refrain. You know, we're going to have an upcoming show. We'll talk about canning, but you definitely don't want to can things like that.
Awesome. Well, have a great rest of your weekend, Tony, and in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be back to talk to you again next week.